It all comes down to this. The first FPL deadline is on Friday the 5th. We discuss last-minute dilemmas and make our final decisions as another fascinating fantasy season gets underway. So it's finally almost here. All these weeks of planning come down to this. The Game Week 1 deadline is Friday at 6:30 p.m. UK time. And we have just one more podcast to hopefully help you out. So firstly, hello again to Sam Bonfield of FPL Family. Sam, I can imagine that the nerves and excitement have ramped up in your household right now.
Oh, for sure. It's just constant, isn't it, at the moment? The app is constantly opening. The transfers backwards and forwards are going. Oh, I literally cannot wait till the deadline. On Friday.
It's times like this. We love Lee Bonfield, your husband, but it must be quite hard living with someone that's also as obsessed with FPL as you are. Anyway, also welcome back to Julian Laurent, back from France, refreshed and ready for the new season, Jules.
Completely, completely. And I'm maybe not as excited as Sam, but very excited.
No one is, Jules.
No one is, that's true. Very excited by the season, you know, and to go through this whole season on the show with all the listeners and you guys, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant fun. Ups and downs of FPL that we all love. Now, this week, we are also joined by the former Republic of Ireland international, who's also an avid FPL manager. Matt Holland, welcome back. How's your summer been?
Summer's been absolutely lovely, thank you. A nice, long, relaxing summer. Spent a nice 10 days away on the beach. Not had to think about Fantasy League at all. And then it's been a horrible, stressful last week trying to put my team together.
I should also tell the people that are listening to this, you've got a lovely tan as well. So it doesn't surprise me you've been away a lot of the summer. Hopefully that has given you, I know you said you've not thought about it, but hopefully it has given you time to prepare your team. How's your FPL team looking as it stands?
Yeah, I think my team's okay. My decision making was difficult. How many premium assets should I own? Who should I own? Which of those premium assets should I have? Haaland or Kane? The one that I had to have was Mo Salah, so he's in the side. Trent Alexander-Arnold also, but I'm reasonably happy with the side I've put together.
Okay, well, we'll find out a little bit more about who's in your team as the pod goes on, because it is time, I think, to talk drafts, to see how those squads are going. Sam, how settled is yours? Which players are 100% in, regardless of what anyone says to you over the next 24 hours or so?
I think I'm nearly there, you know, Kelly. I've been sort of on and off this tinker train for the last few weeks, but I am nearly there now. There are a few players that I know I definitely want. I'm definitely going with the premium goalkeeper. I've got Edison. I'm fairly set on him. And I'm going to have Leicester's Danny Ward as my backup goalkeeper. So those two, that's done. I'm settled on those. The midfield is kind of there as well. I've got Salah. I've the 8.0 midfielder slot. That's maybe still up for grabs. I've got Diaz in there at the moment, but could easily be Mount by the time the deadline rolls around. And I'm 100% having Kane over Haaland. I just can't not have Harry. So that will be a big sofa to hide behind when Manchester City are playing on Sunday.
I think there's going to be a few people. I'm still seeing people saying that that decision between Kane and Haaland is going to go down to the deadline. Jules, I know you're a big Harry Kane fan, but how settled is your side? Which positions maybe are still up for grabs?
Nah, I keep changing. I change a lot. I go back to the old draft. I have to say, I didn't like Joao Cancelo in the Community Shield, and I hate even more the fact that he wears the number seven now. There's something that doesn't go with me and him, the number seven. So I took him out of the team. I put Reece James in, which gave me a bit more money in as well. But Cancelo might well come back once I'm getting used to him wearing the number seven. Yeah, I put Gabriel Jesus in. I didn't want to. And then in the end, I saw him against Sevilla and he was so good. So it's all those things that the more football I watch, and I watch too much, the more I change my mind about so-and-so or this player or this position. So we will see. It will go down to the last minute.
We're all so similar, aren't we? We've all got these decisions to make. I'm a bit like you, Sam, with Luis Diaz. He's in my side at the moment as well, but there's so much competition at the 8 million mark. Obviously, Bukayo Saka at Arsenal, Mason Mount, you mentioned, Kulusevski. There's a number of players there that I've got an eye on, but I really like the impact that Luis Diaz made when he arrived at Liverpool last January. So that was a big call. And then Cancelo or Reece James, I had that, Julian, and I've gone Reece James just to save myself £1 million as well. And then I've got Haaland or Kane up top, and I've plumped the other way to you, Sam. I've gone with Haaland so far.
Oh, it's difficult though, isn't it? I think, because particularly when you're thinking about those Liverpool midfielder slots and whether you go with Diaz as well as Salah, you have that moment where you're then thinking, or do I actually want Andy Robertson, who was really impressive in the Community Shield? So that three Liverpool limit makes that a difficult conversation.
The reason I went with Diaz at the start anyway is that Jota's obviously injured at the moment and they've sold Sadio Mane. So I'm almost guaranteed that he's going to start the season. So that was the reason why I went with him.
Yeah, I saw a few people a little bit worried when it sounds like Jota won't be out for as long as maybe people thought. Obviously, we don't want Jota to be injured, but it kind of, when we know players are out, it makes other decisions very easy. Let's talk a little bit more about Liverpool, because at this stage of the season, all we have to go off is pre-season friendlies, really, isn't it? And the Community Shield last weekend was one of the most competitive of those friendlies. I'm not going to get into the debate of whether it's a proper trophy, if it's a proper game. It still forms part of the pre-season schedule, so we're going to call it a friendly for the sake of this podcast. And let's firstly talk about Liverpool. What did you take away from that, Jules? I know you'll have been looking very closely at it. Mo Salah, again, will get the headlines with a goal and an assist. If it was FPL, he would have had bonus points as well. Surely that only enhances the fact that we have to have it.
Yeah, massively. I mean, he looked sharper than I think a lot of us thought he would, to be fair, because he's so early and yet he looked on such good form, which I thought a lot about it, which is not surprising maybe, because considering the fact that he's not going to go to the World Cup, I guess in pre-season, in terms of fitness work, you can push Mo Salah far more than a Trent Alexander-Arnold, for example, or someone who you know is going to go to the World Cup, who's going to play a lot more games than Mo Salah between now and the end of December, for example. Mo Salah is going to have a month off. If he wants to go on the Amalfi Coast with Matt in November, he can, because it's cool.
I'll be working, Julian.
So you and I would be in Qatar, but Mo can be in the hotel you were in. But that's the thing. So it's not a surprise really that Salah is so sharp now compared to maybe someone else who would have a different approach to fitness work in pre-season because of the World Cup coming up. So Salah just was so good. It was so, so good. It would be crazy not to have him in your team.
Okay, so once again, we have a full house of Mo Salah owners on the podcast. No one dares, especially after that, go against him. What about Trent Alexander-Arnold? You guys have all mentioned him as well. Is he in all of our squads? Yes, Sam?
He is, yeah, for sure. But yeah. I think for me, there is definitely a conversation to be had there. Watching the Community Shield, as obviously we did in this house with Lee supporting Liverpool, I was really torn, because you can save a little bit of money by having Robertson over Trent. Robertson was sharing the set pieces with Trent during the Community Shield. They both got attacking returns. Neither of them would have got a clean sheet if it was in FPL. So you have that kind of quandary of back and forth. And I think the conclusion I drew by the end of the Community Shield was actually, if you can, you probably want to have them both. They both looked fantastic in those games. Robertson was getting a lot of space down that side of the pitch, but I don't think he'll get that regularly. I think he'll be more carefully marked out of the games during the Premier League action, particularly against those clubs that kind of don't attack as much as Manchester City do. So for me, I watched them. Trent, it solidified my desire to have him, but it intensified my desire to double up with Robertson as well.
The problem we have, though, is that we can only have three Liverpool players, and there's so much talk about their attack as well, that all of a sudden, Matt, if you have Trent Alexander-Arnold and you have Andy Robertson and Mo Salah, you've then not got any other options to go elsewhere with their other attackers, which we know are also really attractive.
And the other name that's being bandied around at the moment is Darwin Nunez, the new signing.
Yeah.
And his impact, of course, in the Community Shield as well. He came on, scored, looked a real threat, got himself into some great positions. So he's another one that comes into your thinking. I was just looking at up front, though, and thinking that Gabriel Jesus, much like the other 73% that are owning him at the moment, at £8 million, saves you £1 million, and you know that he's guaranteed to start. He's Arsenal's marquee signing, so for me, he definitely starts the season, whereas Darwin Nunez is a question mark over whether he does start the season or not, because he came off the bench in the Community Shield. So he's the other name from Liverpool that I think that in the season, he'll be in your side at some point.
You've just got three Liverpool players, haven't you, for one spot. And it's deciding whether you go with Nunez, whether you go with Robertson, or whether you go with Luis Diaz. And making that decision is what's going to differentiate your team from other FPL managers, because most of the game are probably going to have Salah and Trent. If it's not by game week one, then within a couple of game weeks. So picking that third one becomes increasingly important, because it's the way you differentiate your Liverpool picks from everyone else's.
So Sam, is that one of the decisions that you're more settled on now, that you will have Robertson as your third Liverpool player? Or is that still one you're trying to work out?
It's still up in the air a little bit, because there are so many good, cheap defensive options this year in the 5 million and the 4.5 million bracket, that you do kind of get swayed into thinking, well, I can save some budget there. And I do, as Matt said earlier, I really like Luis Diaz. I think he had such an impact when he arrived at Liverpool in January. So I am really torn. It's between those two for me. Nunez, I want to wait on. I want to wait and watch him get game time. I want to see how he beds into the league a little bit more. But with Robertson and Diaz, you know what you're getting with both of those guys. And I would really like them both, but I won't compromise on Trent and Salah. And therefore, I'm going to have to choose one or the other. And maybe over the course of the season, I move between them. Maybe starting the season with Robertson, who's in good form, makes sense. And then switch to Luis Diaz later. But I've had Luis Diaz all pre-season, and to take him out now feels like one of those decisions I might regret.
What about you, Jules? Who are your three Liverpool players? You told us on the opening pod that Salah and Trent were your two first picks. So where's that third slot going? Or maybe you're going to be controversial and not have a third Liverpool player. I know you like to be controversial.
Jules, controversial?
Nah. So I had a vision the other night, right? It's a great vision. I'm not going to double up in attacking position. So I've picked one player of each club, really. So there's no two Liverpool players, no two Arsenal, no two Chelsea, etc. So no two City players as well. So there's only room for Mo Salah in this vision. I mean, the vision might change tomorrow, but you know, in this vision, there's only room for Salah in attacking positions and only for Trent in defensive position. I hear what the guys are saying. I like Luis Diaz. I like Darwin. Of course, I like Robo. But I remember very early on in my FPL career doing a show with Sam, and Sam said, oh, let's be careful about doubling up for defensive position as well, because of course, if Liverpool concede, then you lose both.
Oh, that's
your
one thing I hate.
Points, yeah. From Trent and Robo, which I understand. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. So at the moment, I only have two Liverpool players. It doesn't mean that I won't have three in the team on Friday, but for now, it's only Trent and Salah.
Do you know what's interesting? We've got you've got two Liverpool players, but the majority of us got three Liverpool players. How many Man City players has everybody got? Because they're the champions. And yet I'm looking at my team and I've only got one Man City player in my side. And I'll ask all of you, how many Man City players have you got?
I mean, I've got two, but they're two defenders. So I probably feel like I've invested at the wrong end of the pitch because I've got Cancelo and I've got Edison. I just can't get over not having Cancelo. I think I'd rather have him to start the season knowing that I can drop him in price down to somebody else if I want to after the first couple of game weeks. But yeah, I'm looking at that Man City attack thinking I probably should invest, but the Community Shield roulette was out in full force, wasn't it? You know, we saw him kind of completely change the way that they attacked, particularly with those midfielders. And it made me because I had Grealish this time last week. Jules and I, we both had Grealish in our team. I watched the Community Shield and swiftly swapped him out for Leon Bailey at Aston Villa. So I don't know, Jules, did you keep Grealish after the Community Shield?
No, I didn't. I went for Riyad Mahrez because he's my boy and he's not going to be happy if he's not in the team. And I said I'd give him a shout on the show. So I have to have Riyad for now. And if he doesn't deliver, as I said to him, then he's out, of course, because I'm that brutal, you know, I'm really that ruthless, even with friends. So no, he has to be Riyad. But I agree with you on Grealish. Watching the Community Shield, I still feel that it could be a good season for him.
Yeah.
But I was a bit like, there's still some old habits that I saw from last season that I didn't really like. So it's Mahrez for now and Cancelo. That number 7, I need to get used to it and then I can bring him back in the team. But right now, and also he was rubbish in the Community Shield. So I had my doubts on Cancelo after that game. So I changed it all again.
The thing with City is there's such a rotation risk. You're just never sure who's going to start each game. The one that's catching my attention at the moment as an alternative actually to Cancelo is Kyle Walker. Because they've sold Zinchenko, I think he's nailed on to start the season. And his price at 5 million looks an absolute bargain. So Kyle Walker's the one at the moment that I'm looking at and thinking I might squeeze into my side.
I suppose the good thing with Manchester City is they have West Ham in game week one. So if you don't want to invest defensively, you have got a game to kind of see who's playing, see how they settle into the season and then invest in them for game week two. I mean, Kyle Walker for me, if they don't sign anybody else, is a perfect pick in place of Cancelo. Now, you're not going to get the same level of attacking returns potential as you do with Cancelo from Walker. But for 2 million less, you can spend that 2 million buying yourself a better attacking player for your midfield or your forward line. So it does make a big difference to be able to have that as an option. But I do worry that City might sign somebody else in that position and then we might be back on rotation again.
So Sam, just confirming, who are your two City players at the moment?
At the minute, I've got Edison and Cancelo, so I'm going the defensive double up.
Yeah, on the opening podcast, I also said I had Edison. I've taken him out because I feel like it's using up a City spot. And then I might want another player. I might want two attackers, one defender. That was what concerned me. What's making you go towards Edison at the moment?
That's exactly how I feel about Alisson, which is why I haven't got him in my team, because I do think that I will want to use those three Liverpool slots better across the rest of the season with moving between the different attackers as I want to triple up. But with Manchester City, I very rarely want to treble up simply because I don't really know who Pep is going to play at any given moment. But I do know that with Edison, he is going to play every week. He is always up there in terms of the highest scoring points returning goalkeepers. And I don't necessarily see that I'm going to want three Manchester City attackers at any point during the course of the season because, you know, yes, you've got the likes of Grealish and Mahrez and KDB, and of course you've got Haaland, but they're surely going to move in and out of the team depending upon which fixture it is, the impact of the Champions League, the impact of the World Cup, all of that stuff that's going to come during the course of the season. We'll see Pep moving players in and out of the team and withdrawing them on 60 minutes, 70 minutes. So for me, I'd rather have the certainty of knowing that my Manchester City players are going to play. And therefore, Edison fits that category nicely. But I wouldn't do it with Alisson, for example, at Liverpool, because I think those Liverpool spots are more valuable elsewhere.
Yeah, that's my thought. That's the reason I've actually come off both of those players, because I'm not sure. It feels like there's so much uncertainty with both of those teams at the moment as to who to pick. Now, Matt, we've got to talk about Haaland, because Jules and Sam are very much aboard the Harry Kane train. You said you're going for Haaland. Yeah, Sam's the blooming captain. Is that what you call someone that drives a train? I think it is. Captain? Yeah. Why have you gone for Haaland? He's the fourth most heavily owned player in the game, which shows you're not the only one. But as we said before, no one really knows whether to go for him or Harry Kane.
I'm hoping Haaland is going to surpass the train and be a jumbo jet at the start of the season. That's what, that's what I'm hoping. His goal record for Dortmund was absolutely ridiculous. And I know he had some good chances in the Community Shield and didn't take them, but he got those good chances. And he's almost guaranteed goals. I think he'll probably be the top scorer this season. I really do. Harry Kane, for me, has always been a notoriously slow starter to the season. We've seen that in the past. He had that...
Not this year, Matt.
But last year, of course, he had the, am I going to City? Am I not going to City? It didn't happen. He had a slow start. And I just think that I can always bring Harry Kane into the side later in the season. I did that last year, actually. But for now, I'm quite happy to go on the Haaland train, jumbo jet, the Haaland jumbo jet, sorry, rather than the Kane train.
Watching the Community Shield very quickly, Jules, how did you feel? I know the headline was that he missed all those opportunities, but the other headline you can put on the other flip side of that was he got in some brilliant positions to get those opportunities. His movement, his presence, it certainly gives City a complete other element, doesn't it?
Yeah, and he will get better and better the more he settles in that team anyway, because there's a couple of moments where he made a good run and the ball didn't come to him, or the cross was squared instead of in the space where he attacked the space, for example, because that's what City do. I couldn't care less about the chances that he missed, because everybody misses chances anyway, Messi and Ronaldo and even the greatest. What I think was even more fascinating was that we kept saying, yeah, but you know, it's still early. He needs to adapt a bit more. So he got all those chances and could easily have scored two, maybe even three, at a time where he's not even adapted to the team. Imagine what he's going to be when he's adapted to the team. He will be able to score five or six every game. So I just think it's crazy. I'm not worried at all about the lack of efficiency that he had in that game. Maybe he even tried a bit too hard because he knew everybody was watching him. And I think he could easily score at the weekend. And then once he scored once, then I think they're going to flow. But because of my allegiance to H, of course, I have to go with Kane, you know, more than the other H, Haaland. But yeah, I'm a bit worried that Haaland scores a lot of points this season and I don't have him in the team.
Do you know that after the Community Shield, Haaland dropped by 3% ownership? And I thought that was really interesting, because he played actually well. He got in good positions. He had an XG of 1.59, so he should have scored in that game. I felt like there was plenty of opportunity, like George just said, in the future when he's really bedded into that Manchester City team. They know where he's going to be and the kind of runs he's going to make, and he knows the kind of balls they're going to put in and where they're going to land. He will become a fantastic asset. I have no doubt about that. But it did make me laugh at the way that we are moving, kind of moving mad at the moment, aren't we, with our FPL teams. So he has one performance where he plays well but doesn't score, and 3% of the game go, no, thank you, I'm moving on. And I guess that's something that we're going to have to get used to in the early part of the season, because people will move between the premiums. They're so expensive, you can't have them all. And as people perform or don't perform, I suspect we'll see a lot of FPL managers switching between Kane and Haaland, switching between KDB and Son, and moving around those positions a little bit more regularly.
Let's move on to some of the big talking points then, because that is probably the biggest talking point at the moment, Kane versus Haaland. We've got two on the podcast saying Kane, we've got Matt Holland saying Haaland, and you've got me, who is changing them day by day. And you also talk there actually about the changing ownership of Haaland after that. I had Grealish. He's been in one of my, I think he was one of my first picks, just because I liked the price point at the beginning of the season. I decided I was going to go with Kane over Haaland. I felt I had City attacking cover. After that Community Shield, I stuck with Grealish. I was like, no, I'm not gonna have regret. And then I saw how many people were getting rid of him from their teams, and I got complete fear, and I've got rid of him. So I've already followed a train. We're not even on game week one, and I've completely
bat
followed.
Bat yourself, Kelly. Bat yourself. Be patient.
Yeah, believe in yourself.
It's not about just believing in me, though, is it? It's about believing in Jack Grealish as well. Kane versus Haaland. So we've settled that debate by not settling it at all, really. Sam, I've seen some drafts, a lot of people trying to fit in both Kane and Haaland. Is that crazy?
It's not crazy. It's doable. You can have a draft where, because I've tried, that you can get Haaland and you can get Kane and you can have Salah. And you can also squeeze Trent in there as well. But the rest of the slots in your team have to be budget picks. Now, there's plenty of them. There's a loads in the 5.5 million bracket, particularly in midfield, that work really nicely. There's a lot of 4.5 defenders who work brilliantly. You can have the rotating goalkeepers, particularly with Kasper Schmeichel leaving Leicester. Suddenly, we've got two 4.0 goalkeepers at Leicester. If you have them both, that's only costing you 8 million. So lots of flexibility. The problem with doing it is you have to make big sacrifices in terms of those mid-priced players. You can't have Gabriel Jesus in a team where you have Salah, Kane, Haaland and Trent. And you're going to want to have Jesus in your team. Jesus is the heaviest owned player in game week one history. We have never had a player that's been owned by over 72% of the game before. It's an obscene ownership. And the thing about the threemium picks is you can't have him. So yes, you might have Salah and you might have Kane and you might have Haaland. But on Friday evening, when Jesus is playing Crystal Palace, you are going to have the absolute fear in you, because if he goes mad, you've not got him. And it doesn't matter how many premiums you have. If you miss out on those mid-price hauls, that's a problem.
Yeah, it does feel like you end up a bit top heavy almost, doesn't it, Jules? If you go with that, you're very much on the Kane and Salah train. And then the 8 million midfielders, it feels like, gives us a nice opportunity to tap into some of those big teams without needing to go for the big price players.
Yeah, completely. I think Gabriel Jesus is cheap, I have to be honest. I didn't want him at first because I just wanted the differential and not go with everybody else, because obviously you don't have the same points. But the more I watched him again against Sevilla, I thought he was amazing. Everything I hear from Arsenal and the training ground and the other players, I'm like, okay, the guy is in the form of his life. He's so happy. He's so confident. We've said many times that I know Palace away is a tough game to start, but after that, up to the North London Derby in game week 6, I think, or 5, it's a good start for Arsenal in terms of matches and opposition. So you could easily see him continuing the great form that he showed in pre-season. And I know it's only pre-season and friendlies, but still, there were big games as well where Arteta played very strong teams and you could already see the patterns of play and how well Jesus has integrated in the team and his relationship already with the rest. So I got to the point where I thought, it's, again, you have to make room for him, or you have to find a way of getting him. And again, I think at that price, it's a really good price and it's a really good option to get.
I couldn't agree more. He has to be in your side at that price. He's got triple figures the last three seasons, Gabriel Jesus. That's when he's been rotated in and out at Man City. Now he's going to play every week at Arsenal. I think his ability to score big this season is there for everyone to see. In terms of mid-price midfielders, I'm going to throw a name at you. What about Marcus Rashford? He's in my side, Marcus Rashford. Now, hear me out. £6.5 million, and I know he had a difficult season last year, 63 points. But look at his history. I just talked about Gabriel Jesus scoring triple figures for three seasons running. The two seasons prior to last, he scored 174 and 177 points. The potential for Marcus Rashford to score big this year, I think, is there. And at £6.5 million, I think that's an absolute bargain. He's had a decent pre-season. I just think that's one that you can't afford to be without as well.
Have you seen enough from him in pre-season, Matt, to suggest? Because for the past year, 18 months or so, he's admitted himself, he's not been himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is. My only concern is that there's still plenty of time in the transfer window and that Man United are looking for reinforcements at the top end of the pitch. So there's going to be incomings, I would imagine, at Old Trafford. But to start the season at £6.5 million, I just think that Marcus Rashford, I've seen enough, well, over his career. I know he had a difficult season last year and over pre-season, suggests that he will be in my team come the first day.
Jules, you told us on the opening pod that you had Anthony Martial as one of your forwards. Have you stuck with him? Is he still in there?
Yeah, he's still in there. I've been really impressed. I have to say, going forward by what United have done, again, it's only pre-season and, you know, come the Brighton game, it might be very different at the weekend. However, I think that if there's one thing that Ten Hag does really well is attacking and going forward and making the best of the players that he has, whether that's Martial, Rashford, who we mentioned with Sam in the last show as well, Sancho. I think Sancho can have quite a similar narrative to Rashford as well. And the price is decent. I think 7 million for Martial is a really good price, because what we saw in pre-season. And if you think about it, Martial is a perfect player for Ten Hag. Okay, they might sign another striker or Cristiano might end up playing. I don't know. But Martial presses, he runs, he's an intelligent guy, he's versatile. There's that fluidity that Ten Hag wants going, you know, in his attacking position, that Martial, you know, provides, really. And when you see him pre-season, some of the goals they scored, Martial was giving the assist or he was scoring, he was involved in the build-up, but he was also at the finishing. And if you get that confidence back to Martial, the talent has always been there. Remember his first season at the club and in the Premier League. The problem, he lost a bit himself, you know, in the middle. But I think Ten Hag can easily revive his career. So I want to believe in him. And you know what? He's from Paris, obviously like me, but he's not one of my buddies. He's not one of my boys. So this one is purely made on, you know, on what I see and not just on if I love him or not.
Okay, thanks for clearing that up.
I'm just saying, Sam, not like the others. That's what I mean.
You know. Sam, I've just realised, actually, you picked and you tipped Marcus Rashford to be your differential, didn't you, the other week?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, he was my differential for the season. And I think I fully agree with everything Matt's just said. I think this could be a really good season for him. And I think you can't underestimate the impact that the World Cup has as well. Of course, these players are going to want to go to the World Cup with England. So making a good start to the Premier League season with their clubs is going to be so important, particularly with players like Rashford and Sancho. You know, they're going to want to be part of Gareth Southgate's World Cup squad. And I think all of that plays in, and this is why the three-man teams are doable, because you look at players like Martial, Rashford, Sancho at Manchester United. These are big club investments. Manchester United, you have to forget about Manchester United last season and just look at them as a fresh slate with the players that they have under a new manager, because this is going to be a very different season for them. And you can easily be blindsided by looking at the underlying stats from the 21-22 campaign, where Manchester United just weren't Manchester United. They weren't performing in the way that we would expect them to as Premier League fans or FPL managers alike. I think going into the season, Rashford will have one of the best seasons of his career.
It's a gamble. Oh, Man United.
Bold statement.
Man United.
Oh, that's strong.
It is a big statement. That is a big statement. I think Man United are a gamble. I think last year I just didn't trust Man United. I just didn't trust any of their players. I was struggling to put them into my team because you just didn't know what you were going to get from them. But pre-season, it has looked fresh. It's looked different. And there's someone at the back that I've gone with as well, is Diogo Dalot. His ownership is very low. You're talking about differentials. I think he's a 4.7% ownership. And at £4.5 million, you're looking at a premium team, an attacking defender, potential to get attacking returns. So I've gone with Dalot and Rashford actually from United so far.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've got Dalot in my team at the moment as it stands too, because 4.5 million, he is an enabler. Any other enablers? Who have you got in your defence, Jules, that is enabling you to free up funds for elsewhere?
So I've got Nathan Patterson at Everton. Okay, So hear me out.
I like this one, Jules. Yeah. I'm with you on this.
And also, I'd like to point out that I got a couple of tweets saying, why have you not picked out Nathan Patterson when we went through positionally last week? So this is yours and his chance to shine, Jules. Tell us why we should have him.
No, I watched them the other day and they played with a back three, which I think Frank Lampard changed slightly through the preseason to be a bit more solid defensively, and that suits Patterson even more because he's maybe more of a wing back than a fullback, really, with the qualities that he has. But I looked good. I don't really trust Lampard or Everton. I'm not sure they're gonna have a good season, but I think at 4 million, you go for it. He's gonna start 100%, probably in a back five, which is good for him because obviously there should be more attacking opportunities for him to provide crosses and you know, get assists maybe. And certainly defensively, you defend better usually as a five than as a four, or you should certainly. So I like why so. So I will, you know what, 4 million, a bit like Nico Williams at Forest, go for it, see what happens. But if he plays regularly, and I believe he will, he's very talented kid. If he stays fit, which again, he should at his age, you know, I think this one is not much of a risk, really. So let's go for it. I think he's got the potential to have a really good season.
Do you know he's played 70% of their preseason minutes, yeah. Nathan Patterson. And in that time, he's got a couple of assists as well from that slot. So he is making the game time in preseason. He has clearly got Lampard's buy-in going into the campaign. Difficult start to the season for them in terms of their game week one fixture. But then after that, they have got some relatively nice fixtures. And as Jules says, he is the perfect price point, isn't he? We all love a 4.8 million defender because we can sit them on our bench during the difficult games. We can bring them on. They can come off the bench if we needed, if one of our premiums misses out for whatever reason. So for me, he's the perfect enabler. Like Nico Williams at Nottingham Forest, you know, when he was at Liverpool, we were all kind of going, please get yourself a move away this season as FPL manager. 4.0, perfect if you're going to start. He played 90 minutes in Forest's last pre-season friendly, and usually the last one is the one that I kind of look to because that sets up where you think the team is going to be going into game week one. So the fact that he played, it does mean that we've got two potentially starting 4.0 defenders this year. And if you want to save the budget to up your premium picks, then going in with both of those to start the season is perfect.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to remember, isn't it? Often when we spend 4 million on a defender, they're not necessarily going to start. When you're picking your squad, you are picking players to also sit on your bench. So you just want someone that's going to play so that if they come off the bench, they get you some points, but they don't necessarily have to start for you every week. Matt, what about you in terms of midfield, the cheaper midfielders, or is Rashford your cheapest midfielder as it stands?
No, Andreas Pereira is my cheapest midfield player. I think a lot of people have gone down this route. I think when you're looking for budget players, you tend to go towards the promoted teams and you're not quite sure what they're going to do when they get into the Premier League. Andreas Pereira is a Man United player and he's priced as a Man United midfielder, really, because they weren't expecting him to play too much at Man United, expecting him maybe to even leave the country and play elsewhere. So here he is, now playing as a number 10 in an advanced role for Fulham. I think he's a great bench option at 4.5 million. So Andreas Pereira's in my team. The other promoted sides, and I'm looking up top now, I'm looking at Brennan Johnson at Nottingham Forest. I know Nico Williams is a really good budget defender at £4 million. He's £6 million, Brennan Johnson, but he got 16 goals and 16 assists in the Championship last year. He's £6 million as a striker. So he's someone that I will be keeping an eye on. And the other one who is in my team at the moment is Mitrovic. Now, I know last time he came into the Premier League, I know it's a big call. Last time he came into the Premier League, he didn't get many minutes. Scott Parker, clearly there was an issue with Alexander Mitrovic and he didn't play him. He didn't play him regularly. Mitrovic is someone that needs to be playing week in, week out, I think for his fitness levels as well. So he got 63 points last time he was in the Premier League. The time before that, he got 134. He got 11 goals and 4 assists in season 18-19. So I think Mitrovic, playing every week, can score good points this season. So at the moment, he's in my side. I'm debating whether to go with Alvarez of City because he's the same price. Brennan Johnson's also, in my thinking, at 500,000 cheaper. But Mitrovic, Pereira and Nico Williams are the three players, my sort of budget players, if you like, from the promoted sides.
Don't overlook Aston Villa, though, because I think we all automatically start looking at the promoted teams for the budget picks, because they tend to come into the game that little bit cheaper. And all of the ones you've just reeled off, I think, are brilliant picks, particularly Pereira. I mean, he is the most heavily owned midfielder priced under 12 million in the game right now. And it's no surprising given his price tag. But I'm looking at Aston Villa thinking there's a really nice couple of budget enablers there. In midfield, you've got Leon Bailey, who's in my team. And he's the one I took for Grealish after the Community Shield. He's got 3 goals and 2 assists in pre-season. The comments that Gerrard makes about him, and I quoted him last time, he is in really, really good form. And I think had he stayed fit, we would have seen this from Bailey last season as well. But even up top, we've got a budget enabler there too in Archer. Now, he scored twice in pre-season for Villa. I'm not for a minute suggesting he's going to get loads of game time. And he is maybe one of these budget enablers where you don't necessarily get the regular starts because they've got Ings and Watkins in that position too. But if he's going to come on with the new 5-sub rule and get minutes in every game, then having someone like Archer in your third forward slot could be really useful for budget reasons.
In terms of Aston Villa, I've actually got Matty Cash in the team at £5 million. Talk about an attacking defender, someone who can get a goal. I think got 4 goals last season. He's actually in my team. Same price. The other fullback is Luca Digne, and he takes set pieces. So I'm a little bit torn, but I know Matty Cash does offer you a real goal threat. So at the moment, I have got Matty Cash in the team.
Okay, before we move on, it feels like we could talk about every team here because it is the final podcast before the season start. But I just wanted to find out what you're doing with that third forward slot. Sam, you've just mentioned Cameron Archer there, but it sounds like most managers, the most common double up top seems to be Jesus plus Kane or Haaland. So Matt, firstly, you're on Mitrovic and that's not going to change, or maybe it is?
No, that may change. It's definitely Jesus and Haaland to start. And then my third striker is still up for debate. I've got Mitrovic, Alvarez at Man City, Brennan Johnson, and now Sam's sort of thrown Cameron Archer into the mix as well. So he's now into my thinking.
That's the problem with this podcast. Too many options, some people might say. Jules, your third slot. I don't think you've said who it's going to be yet. Have you revealed this and I've missed it?
Yeah, Anthony Martial. We said Jesus and
I'm losing the plot. You can tell I've talked too much FPL.
Forget about Martial, Kelly.
I know. I was listening. I've just got so many names and trying to remember who's said what. Sorry. So Martial. And I'm guessing he's pretty set. So your forwards must be set because you've had him from the beginning.
Yeah, I like those three. I believe in them. I think Martial, who's owned by 6.9% of the managers, which, by the way, if you look at ownership of those strikers in the category, you know, there's only Jesus, Haaland, Kane, Darwin ahead of him. So I think he's quite popular still, even if he's under 10% ownership. So yeah, I want to believe in that front three. It's a good front three, I think.
I quite like that front three, actually. Also, you've got strikers from Spurs, Arsenal and Manchester United.
That's the vision. Don't double up by taking positions. I'm telling you, that's for the season.
No, but also a lot of people will have a third striker, maybe from a team that isn't going to be challenging for the top four, top six, whereas you've potentially got three strikers playing for top six teams that should be playing week in, week out. At the moment, I think I've got Greenwood from Leeds just because I haven't got enough budget, but I know I need to change that. Sam, I'm not going to try and guess your third striker because you're probably also going to tell me you've said it and I've not been listening.
No, I haven't, because this is the spot where I'm really not decided at all. So Cameron Archer is in my thinking, but I've already got Leon Bailey and Matt Cash in my team. So I'm a bit unsure about troubling up on Aston Villa. I've got Greenwood currently in my draft, but I would prefer somebody who was going to regularly start. My current draft, I've got 1.5 million in the bank, so I can afford to invest slightly more heavily in that third spot. I don't know how this has happened. Well, I do. It's because I took Grealish out for Leon Bailey and then I changed my goalkeeper strategy. So I am kind of a bit undecided on it. I do like Brennan Johnson and I am tempted to have a bit of a swing on him for the early part of the season, because, you know, one of these promoted clubs will come up and hit the ground running. So he is one that I am kind of toying with the idea of as well.
I never thought I'd see the day that Sam has got, hold on, let me confirm this. You've got more Aston Villa players in your team and your squad than Spurs players. Is that right?
That is right. Ooh, yeah, I just have the one Spurs player.
What's going on?
No way.
I know.
No way.
You see, you have to put your loyalties aside when it comes to FPL, don't you? And you have to go in with the best team that you can create. And for me, the best team I can create would have Son and Kane in it. But there is absolutely no way I can budget for both of those guys. So sacrifices have been made and just one Spurs player.
Just quickly as well, you mentioned that you've got 1.5 million in the bank. Would you recommend managers keep some money in the bank just so they've got a little bit of flexibility after game week one or even in a few game weeks' time, just to make any moves that they might need to make if they've missed players in the opening weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not necessarily 1.5 million. That feels a little bit excessive. But I do like to keep 0.5 simply because you will have players. FPL managers, we're a fickle bunch. We go into the season and we go, yes, I've got this amazing team. Game week one happens and everyone goes, oh, I don't want this player anymore. And suddenly you get a mass exodus because they've not necessarily returned in that one opening fixture that you were anticipating that they would. That means you might then lose 0.1 in value because they've been massively transferred out. And the player that you want to target might be massively targeted by everyone else because, you know, like they've got a hat trick in game week one and they've gone up by 0.1. Suddenly you're 0.2 away from being able to afford this player. And that's really frustrating because then you've got to take a -4. You've got to change up another position in your pitch, which you might not want to do. If you've got 0.5 in the bank, then you've got the ability to just move between those players and you buy yourself a little bit of time and flexibility.
Yeah, that's what I always try and do. And then I always end up having a fear and thinking, oh, I can get a better player with that 0.5. But yeah, that is a very sensible option if you do want to be sensible. Come on then, Matt, who are you captaining? Are you going to go Mo Salah just because you think everyone else will and because it feels too bold not to? Or are you going bold on game week one?
Mo Salah. Nailed on. just put the armband on him and forget about it. Mo Salah. I've actually had a little look further ahead. So the first 5 game weeks, I've picked my captain in advance. And Salah makes the cut twice.
Twice? I'm surprised it's only twice.
Haaland twice and Jesus.
But Sam, we said this, didn't we, last week? We alluded to it very briefly where we said the signing of Haaland and the fact now Haaland, Kane, Salah, there's more premiums, there's more players we're expecting to score big, means we could see this variation in captaincy.
It's difficult, isn't it, I think, with captains. I'm really torn. I'll be really honest with you when it comes to captaincy decision. I'm really torn. The underlying stats for Salah in game week one are obscene. So the guy has returned in every single game week one fixture he's played in. That's 5 matches, 5 returns. 4 of them were double-digit hauls. And he averages, get this, 13.6 points per match in game week one. Now, that is obscene. And he's
just
playing
for armband on him then.
Yeah.
However, then on the flip side of that, you have Harry Kane. And of course, you know, I don't need to go into my love with Harry Kane too much, but his underlying stats against Southampton are really, really good. So then you have a player who averages 7.3 points per match against Southampton. He's played 14 times against them in the Premier League. And in that time, has got 17 attacking returns, 11 goals, 6 assists. He's had 5 goals and 1 assist in pre-season. So the form for both of them against in game week one and against their opposition is good. The form for both of them in pre-season is good. I just am really tempted. I've just got a feeling about Kane going into game week one. So I'm really tempted.
It's not like you
to
have a feeling about Kane.
I know. Yeah. Well, you know what I'm like, Kelly. I'm also just a little bit, I'm a little bit superstitious with the 12:30 kickoff because it ruins the rest of my game week if I've captained someone at 12:30 and they don't do what I'm going to do, what I'm hoping that they're going to do. So I never really like to captain someone in that early kickoff, which is the only thing that's putting me off Mo Salah, but everything else about him screams, hand me the armband now.
What about you, Jules? Who's the armband going to? Is it your boy Harry, or are you going to listen to the Mo Salah stats?
Oh, I love all the stats that Sam just said. I mean, Salah is impressive. I give him the armband, the headband, any bands that he wants, to be fair. I'm just... I don't know. I think right now is H, of course, because, you know, but I'm really tempted to give it to Mo. I don't know. It's a trick. It's a really difficult one, this one. And again, what Sam said is you could already be, I don't know, let's say you captain Harry Kane and he's got a good game and maybe he scores, for example, but Mo Salah has an amazing game. You're already like, I don't know, 10 points behind and you feel gutted. And it's only beginning of August and I'm like, oh no, I don't want that. So I don't know.
That's why I think this could be one of the most exciting seasons in recent history. I feel like Haaland as well has come in and just kind of stirred things up a little bit and given us some variation. That said, there does feel like there's a lot of players that we still know we need to have regardless of Haaland. We've discussed it, the Salahs, the Trents. There's still plenty of players we need to have. I'm going to end, guys, on a prediction. Top scorer for game week one. Jules, who's it going to be?
Well, I think we go back again to the debate of the captaincy. I think that Mo Salah can destroy Fulham away easily, even with an early kickoff that Sam doesn't like. And a lot of players don't like, because, I mean, Matt, we remember you have to eat pasta at 8:30 in the morning, so it's not easy, but... I think Mo Salah likes pasta at 8:30 in the morning still, so I go for Mo Salah.
I think regardless of what Mo Salah eats, when he eats, true, it doesn't seem to affect him too much, does it? Sam?
Do you know, we sit here and we talk about Kane and Salah, and they will be the big captaincy conversations, but would it surprise you if it wasn't one of them that's the biggest scorer of game week one? Because it wouldn't me. Like, I would... Mm. If it was Luis Diaz that was the top scorer in game week one, I really wouldn't be surprised by that.
It's going to be someone like Diogo Dalot or someone, isn't it? Completely throw a curveball. FPL doing FPL things. Matt, what about you? Your prediction?
You can't look beyond Salah. Sam's stats there about his first day record. Five in a row, he's got a haul. So, I think you have to say Salah. I'm hoping Haaland, seeing as the other two have got Kane.
Yeah. We're hoping Kane, Matt.
Actually, Matt, very quickly, last week we asked people for their season predictions. And because the season still hasn't started, I feel like it's still valid to ask you this. And I'm sure listeners will be very interested to know, who do you think is going to be the top scorer over the course of the season? So the top scorer in the whole of FPL this season.
I think Haaland. I honestly think that Haaland this season can score big. I think his record at Dortmund, the chances that he's going to get from Man City, he's going to score an absolute hatful. So I'm going to say Erling Haaland. And that's, you know, looking at last season, the strikers struggled a little bit, generally. I think there was only two in the top 20 scorers last season. But I'm going to stick my neck out and say Haaland.
I'm not sure how much that's sticking your neck out, really.
Well, not really, no.
It's Erling Haaland, but yeah.
That's true.
For what it's worth, I think I agree with you. And I'm putting you on the spot a little bit with this one because I hadn't briefed you on this. A differential. Who do you think is going to be the one player in FPL that we're not really talking about, or maybe we are a little bit, one that's going to go under the radar and score big? Think of a couple of years ago when we had Lundstrom. There's always one player, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I like Rashford. I know that he's not really under the radar. The other name that has caught my attention this year is Pedro Neto of Wolves. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly at the start of the season with Jimenez injured, he could well be playing as a number nine. So Pedro Neto is someone that I was a huge fan of before his injury. I think he's a terrific player. I think he could do well this season.
Yeah, he's been in a few of my drafts as well. Just 5.5 million, as you said, could potentially be playing up front in the absence of Raul Jimenez. Well, guys, thank you so much for being with us. Matt, one thing I would say is I've been very impressed with your coolness, your calmness. You seem pretty set on your team, really.
I don't know about that. I might just rip it up, that draft of mine. After that last hour, I'm not sure about it anymore. So... Who knows? We'll see. I've got one more day of stress.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's excitement, but it is also stress. And I know every single year I leave it right up until the last couple of minutes, until like the last possible moment. But that's why we love FPL. There's so much variation. And like I said before, I feel like this season is going to be a really exciting one. Sam, I'll see you tomorrow at Fest.
You will indeed. I'm looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. And Jules, I'll see you again very soon. Busy weekend for you. Where are you?
I think I'm at Crystal Palace on Friday and then at West Ham on Sunday.
You're not going to watch H on Saturday?
No H on Saturday, no. Saturday I'm on BT Sport if you fancy watching me and my tan on BT Sport.
Well, Jules, your tan? Come on. I've seen
that. 2 weeks in France.
I was expecting
handsome
more from
as
you.
Ever, some people say.
Well, yes, maybe just your wife. Well, I'm going to see Harry Kane in action this weekend. Sam, you going there as well?
No.
What? You two are meant to be the Harry Kane fan club. Yeah, I'm going there.
I know. I can get tickets for this weekend. Gosh, it. And they're in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, I tell you what, it's a good job that I am loyal to Harry Kane. I'll be going along to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Saturday to see how he gets on. So I'll let you know next week if he passes the eye test and if, in fact, we do all need him in our FPL teams. The good news as well is that we'll be back next Thursday, but there is also another podcast that we are going to have for you. Off the Bench is going to come to you at the end of every game week this season. So on Monday, we'll have a couple of experts for you. This week, it's Lee Bonfield and Gianni Baticcio. They'll be discussing all the big decisions and everything that's happened during the game week. So make sure you join them on Monday. Also, of course, we want to pit our wits against you guys. The FPL Pod Mini League code is CYR.
1Y6. So please do join that. And remember, your deadline is 6:30 p.m. on Friday evening ahead of Crystal Palace versus Arsenal. If you need any other tips or advice as you finalise your teams, do head over to fantasy.premierleague.com. The very best of luck. The fun is just about to begin.